This program is proudly brought to you by Alan Gray, building long-term wealth for our clients since 1973.
And welcoming you to this Wednesday evening here on your number one talk radio station, dear listeners, this being Eagle FM. And as you do know, this is your weekly episode that is in partnership with Alan Gray Namibia, that of the business and economic segment, wherein we highlight the particular benefits, ultimately also in terms of some of the episodes that we've already done, which has been six already, which I've talked about your particular investment need, as well as also unit trust, as well as also looking at your retirement. Last week we had the foundation discussions, but we revert back this week once again to one of the guests that we've had here prior to last week and the week before, that being Mr. Etienne Leroux. And Etienne is back, yes, here in terms of helping us understand also a different dimension. But before we start, dear listeners, just welcoming Etienne. Etienne, good evening and thank you once again for taking the time. Really like to know where you get the energy for, you know, moving about so much, but thank you once again.
Lovely to be back. Thank you, Dwight.
Etienne, if we start off on tonight's discussion, we have had the unit trust discussions, we've had the retirement savings discussion, but there's also an important aspect, or let me rather call it like a school of thought in its own, that commands that you need to start with something completely different. Usually this is financial literacy. I don't know if I can deem you as our expert, but obviously you'll have to don that hat for tonight. But when we look at financial literacy, you know, what are sort of like the telltale signs to identify, or how can someone get into the know of financial literacy?
Yeah, thank you. I mean, financial literacy, you know, is such an important thing. It entails so many facets, really, but you know, if I think the goal with being financially literate is financial wellness, mm-hmm. you know, and there's this saying that if you mindfully manage your money, you should mindfully manage your money instead of your money managing you. So you know, that's the ultimate goal. But so the financial literacy suggests that you equip yourself at least to some extent with a baseline knowledge of investing, of finance, etc., to make informed decisions. You don't always have to make them on your own, but at least, you know, familiarize yourself with some basics. And the reality is, you know, that round about 80% of people's problems are directly or indirectly related to money, whether we like it or not. So you know, understanding money and effectively using, you know, financial management tools, I mean, we will talk tonight about budgeting, but it, you know, it also includes investing, insurance, tax, etc. You know, that is that you know, by brushing up on that, that is financial literacy, you know, putting yourself in a better position to make better informed decisions, whether on your own or with the aid of a financial planner.
Can we identify it as, in a colloquial term for a Gen Zer, as adulting, as they would love to say?
Well, I mean, it sounds about right, although you don't have to wait till you are an adult. But yeah, no, I mean, really, it's just equipping yourself, you know, and there's actually a lot of information out there, and I'll speak a bit later on where one can, you know, what channels are there that we can actually access some good quality information.
And if we've obviously, you've highlighted, you know, everything, like the cornerstones of financial literacy, like what people need to know if they are employed, tax related, also if they've got savings related to their them being employed, and even in other scopes as well, if they wish to help others in terms of just making and knowing about what they have to do with money. One of the important things is also asking, you know, how do we utilize the approach? Because obviously you would have the basics. I don't want to say that people should know accounting, but just, you know, what would the basic symptoms look like? Is it always about, you know, like at the end of the month when you have your grocery list versus your other expenditure list versus your what am I going to do for me list? Is it in that specific scenario, or are we talking like everything holistically, package everything together?
I think ultimately it should be holistically. You know, it's familiarizing yourself. So say you get to the point where you decide or where you come to the realization that your pension fund, maybe you're employed, you belong to a pension fund, and the savings there is not sufficient to provide for you once you're retired. Mm-hmm. So you acknowledge the fact that you have to save additionally. Or you identify a separate investment goal, like going on a holiday or saving for an engagement ring, whatever
that's
the case.
That's not me.
You've reminded us before. You know, whether that is, if you identify a goal, you know, the next step would be, okay, so what are the options at my disposal to save that additional money or to save towards that goal? You know, so financial literacy is quite broad. Mm. It could depend. I would also say, you know, put kind of the hat on of cautioning against DIY investing.
Mm.
You know, you could go onto YouTube and learn probably how to build a table. They will tell you what wood to buy, how to assemble, etc. You can get the same with financial planning. But then you have to make 100% sure that your source is reliable and that you understand it fully. You know, there's a reason why you know, investment professionals study for a very long time.
Yeah.
Because it's not as simple as ABC. And there's also not a one-size-fits-all solution to investing.
Mm.
So as much as you can equip yourself with you know, knowledge that is available in the public domain, you must also have the know-how how to filter what is actually, you know, correct, relevant, and true, I guess.
Yeah. Obviously, many of the discussions that we've had so far has obviously been retirement, and ultimately that being of the role that a unit trust can play in the Alan Gray, you know, discussion that we've had so far. If we factor in, this is now bridging over into our next subject matter. If we factor in that, you know, how would the average person view? I know in terms of conveying that discussion, the word person just evaporated somewhere. But how would the average person also view what role financial literacy can play in their lives? We've given some examples. It could be basic budgeting. It could be, you know, DIY investment. I even would not suggest that. I've tried, but I wouldn't suggest it. But when we look at this realm, obviously it's about, you know, just being sure about, you know, what decisions you're going to make. How would that factor itself into the financial literacy aspect that we're looking at?
No, I mean, a good question. The thing is, you know, money is part of our lives from the very day that we are born. Mm. You know, I think just identifying that in itself is already a big win. You know, so what role does financial literacy play in people's lives? It is so broad. I'm just thinking now, one of my previous bosses used to carry a little notebook in his shirt pocket. And if he went out to buy a Brechen and a can of fruit juice, he would write it down.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, a gentleman that was, I assume, that he earned a decent salary, etc. But he would still write down, you know, every cent that he gave out.
Mm.
Similarly, another boss of mine who had three daughters, he made sure that every one of his daughters at the end of the month had to report back to him what they spent their pocket money on and whether there was money left or not. And I always thought to myself, you know, what is the point of this?
Time. When you're a kid, it moves slower than a sloth trying to get through airport security. There is just so much of it. Skip forward a few years to your 20s. Time is still your friend. It says have some balance. Go party and have fun. Then your 30s hit. And time suddenly steps on the accelerator like it's trying to catch a traffic light before it goes red. 40s. Now time is moving faster than your 10-year-old on a sugar high. 50. You're desperately trying to save as much as you can, but time is moving so fast. And all you can think is, where did all the time go? That's why after 50 years of investing, we've learned that time is the greatest gift of all. And the good news is, if you invest early, time gives you money. And then money gives you more time. for some much-deserved you time. Now, isn't that a compelling enough reason to invest? Ellen Gray, long-term investing. Ellen Gray is an authorized FSP.
And what he did was already at a very young age, he would expose his children to the fundamentals of budgeting. Because the reality is, you know, if you want to be in a position to save or to survive financially, you have to spend less than what you earn.
Mm.
So already at a very young age, those children were exposed to the principles of budgeting and making ends meet, whether or not the families was financially actually did sound not require or, this.
Yeah, yeah.
I think those principles were important. So yes, you know, money forms part of our lives from the day that we are born till the day that we pass away. And understanding where you are in your financial journey or financial life cycle, whatever you want to call it, I think that is quite important. And that is why you have to be financially literate to one extent or another. Also think about it. There will be people that will take advantage of you, maybe even within your own family, if you don't know the basics of finance. And you know, perhaps something that schools should focus on a bit more, make people a bit more streetwise about money.
Yeah.
Don't you find it fascinating, Dwight? I mean, every now and then you read it in the newspapers or wherever, whether it's locally or in South Africa, the rest of the world, you will read another financial scam that was uncovered.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some guy making huge promises of exorbitant returns and then managed to attract 20, 50, 100 million dollars of people's hard-earned money and, you know, it's gone. People still fall for that kind of thing. And you would think, you know, this is 2024. Surely people are more wake up than that.
Yeah.
You know, just another example of why you should at least know the basics so that you can identify or at least develop some sort of a gut feeling, whatever it is, you know, about finance.
Obviously, also one of the sort of like the undertone discussions that we've always touched on since episode one, Etienne, has been the importance of accessing a financial planner or someone to assist in this regard. Linking that up with our question of how does it impact the average person, how important does that role still stay? I know you've emphasized it for the first four episodes, but obviously that single point of accessibility is also crucial. The financial planning, the financial planner to assist also in terms of looking at the needs that people have.
It is fascinating. There is a piece of research that was done looking at where the average person who they reach out to seek financial advice.
Mm.
And what it showed is that 54% of all people reach out to relatives, to family members. Now, imagine how dangerous that is, you know, to reach out to a family member who might not even be in a position that's remotely linked to the world of finance.
Mm.
I'm thinking doctors, engineers, lawyers, that's people that one would automatically assume will have a lot of knowledge or that is in a position where they are in the higher income earning group. But just because you are you earn a higher income does not equip you financially.
Mm.
I've said it to so many people before. Even my wife has got two master's degrees, studied for as long as I've known her. That doesn't make her a financial expert. You know, her knowledge lies in a completely different field.
Mm.
So, but what the research shows is that more than half of us reach out to relatives. You know, second to that, people reach out to just over a quarter of all people reach out to their spouses or partners for financial advice. Again, if they are not, you know, if they're in a completely different field of work or line of work, you know, why would you reach out to them? And then more than 10% of people make decisions based on their own information. You know, these are the DI, the do-it-yourself investors, which could work out or, you know, could be rather dangerous. So on your question, you know, what about a financial advisor? Absolutely, that remains sort of the most prudent thing to do, in my opinion. Look, If it is that you want to save $500 a month, you know, you're probably fine if you do a bit of your own research and decide where to invest it. You know, there are some basic guidance out there that can assist one with that. But if it is longer term planning, you know, if you are, no matter what your age is, or you're nearing retirement, or you know, you're starting out in life, there's now something. You know, now you need kind of a financial roadmap or plan for many years to come. That I would definitely do with the assistance of a financial planner.
And if we've got to look at obviously some steps or factors to consider, you know, usually how would they look like? It's not to say that the, you know, the average person obviously has a lazy mentality. I don't want to attribute that, but obviously people, when we talk about discussions or have the discussions we've had so far here on the BES, it usually is also a notion that it's not always information people readily access, you know, in terms of understanding what's the steps that I can take. Some of them might be even be like, do I have to pay for this person? Which might be a yes, which might be a yes, because they are doing a job. But yeah, what would we have to look at that specific scenario?
I must say, just on your last point, you know, I might have to pay this person. Absolutely. The newer generation financial advisors are well-educated, people, you know, and often I think a lot of people, you know, think that I should get this advice for free.
Yeah.
But if you consider the value that this person might add, you know, over the long term to your financial well-being and sort of, you know, the end result, you know, it might just be a very small price that you are paying for this kind of advice. But I mean, you know, the steps that you have to take. Dwight, it is fascinating how many people do not, you know, do not know where they stand financially. You know, to say, what is my current financial position? How much money do I have? How much do I owe? What are my goals? You know, financial goals is something that you have to write down. It is something I've seen friends writing down their goals and with a magnet put it up against the fridge, you know, to remind them, this is what I'm working towards, this is what I'm saving towards. And you have to sit down, and it can be as simple as taking a piece of paper and writing down, listen, what are some of my financial goals? For me, one, as I've said before, 8 months ago, I became a dad for the first time. I've got to think 18 years ahead, you know. And that is for tertiary education. So that's probably the bigger one. But maybe it is, you know, 12 years ahead when that child goes to high school. We all know that tuition is quite expensive. In Namibia. You know, so do I already start a pot of savings, you know, and yes, the answer is yes. For the tertiary education, it's 18 years from now, but already now I save in a unit trust for my daughter's university one day. So those are some of the steps. So for me, the simplest ones are familiarize yourself with your financial position. It's not good enough to know that, you know, I have a personal loan here and I have a credit card there. You must know exactly how much do I owe on, you know, in terms of my debts, how much do I have, and write down your goals. Then you can draw up a budget, because if you understand what are my expenses, etc. Now you can draw up a budget and you can plan better, and you might actually find by planning and knowing exactly where your money goes every month that you can now plan more accurate and be in a better financial position. You know, and then there are all the others, as if this is not enough. You know, think about insurance. Are you covered appropriately? You know, if something were to happen to you yesterday, would there be an amount of money paying out to your loved ones to take care of them? You know, if you have debt, and you pass away today, are you leaving someone else with that problem, or do you have life cover in place to make provision for that? So those are just examples, but it starts, the process is as simple as taking a piece of paper, or for those who are a bit more savvy, go open an Excel spreadsheet on your computer and start typing in. What do I have? What do I owe? Where do I want to be? and budget accordingly to see how you can make it work.
So usually some of the important things that it's a good thing you mentioned the insurance, which is probably also something that many Namibians, you know, never factor in into the discussions regarding just financial literacy overall. But these are the certain aspects that everyone has to adult towards. If you're now the new generation, if you're in our age bracket, which is above 35 going ahead, there are many Namibians that are used to this. But even in that scenario, Etienne, if we look at it, because, you know, earlier today I had to deal with plumbers and, you know, the particular nuisances that come in about that. Obviously, you could be someone that suffers cash directly out of your pocket, or it's something that you can claim back. They both have their benefits and both have their negatives. When we're looking at this in our discussion now of the financial literacy scenario, there are obviously telltale signs that can tell someone, yeah, there's a rainy day that you can never account for, Dwight. Mm. Or there would be a what-if scenario that might never show up, but also just be safe. How does that also factor into this discussion?
You know, with COVID, mm. I think COVID opened our eyes to a lot of things. Mm. I think most of us would either have experienced it ourselves or know of someone that, you know, or a family or friends that either lost their job or, you know, that passed away, mm. and the family were in a difficult position. Or it could be as simple as, you know, a major appliance breaking down at home. What I'm moving towards here is the importance of an emergency fund cannot be overemphasized. Now, the clever guys that write the handbooks, the financial planning handbooks, would suggest that you have between 3 and 6 months worth of salary saved up and kept aside, and to use that for
the rainy days.
For the rainy days, you know, for when the dark clouds gather.
We would love some rainy days.
For the unforeseen, yeah. And, you know, and I think this is something, especially, as I said, during the COVID times, people realized, oh, well, you know, especially for those not lucky enough to earn a fixed salary or had to take a salary cut, you know, is to make provision for that. So now you know this, you know. So once you know the importance of an emergency cash fund, and it can take time to build up. You know, as I say, I don't think I've got 6 months of salary saved up and just lying around. Mm. I should have, but I don't think I'm there. And the mere fact that I don't think I don't know is also not good enough. You know,
it's actually news to me too that we should have something like that.
Oh yes,
yeah.
Very important. Look, some people follow a different approach and have a credit facility with the bank to say, you know, if I'm in trouble. But then you have to have super self-control.
Yeah.
You know, it's too many people will find excuses to use that money or that credit line. So say you have a credit card with a 100,000 credit limit. You know, I'm sure you're going to find some excuse to just, you know, go borrow swiping from yourself.
Go swiping.
And that is dangerous. Yeah. So identifying that, and there, you know, for instance, a money market unit trust, such a wonderful vehicle to build up your emergency fund. In the old days, they would use a coffee tin
or
the little piggy banks. Yeah. You know, the banks even handed these out, and you would crack it open when there was an emergency.
Mm.
But that is extremely important to have that.
I'm actually taking you back to the scenario in terms of we had to look at the average, you know, how this factors into the average person's everyday life. One of them obviously has been that there pops up a terminology also by the name of a personal financial cycle. How does this fit into like the financial literacy discussion?
Imagine if you could save time like you save money. A second here, a minute there. Type a little faster, walk a little faster. Or you could stop scrolling on the internet. Just think of all the hours you'll save. Now, what if you could take all that time and invest it? Watch it grow. Until eventually, one day, you'd have so much time that you wouldn't know what to do with it all. But unfortunately, time doesn't work like that. it can't be stored or banked. And unlike money, you can't make it back. That's why after 50 years of investing, we've learned that time is the greatest gift of all. And the good news is, if you invest early, time gives you money. And then money gives you more time to do whatever you want to do, even if it is scrolling on the internet. Ellen Gray, long-term investing. Ellen Gray is an authorized FSP.
So that's financial cycle. So think about it. If you are in your early 20s, you've just started out working, you're typically single, don't have children, that kind of thing. Your financial needs are very different to somebody in their 40s that have, you know, that might typically be married, have school-going children. So your budget and your financial needs are completely different. The people in their 40s would have to have life insurance, you know, that life cover if something were to happen to them, or even an insurance product that if they become incapacitated and cannot work and generate an income, you know, to pay out in such a scenario. And I guess there are certain targets as well that you should meet as you move along. So that cycle that you are referring to is just understanding where you are in that cycle and what your sort of unique needs are at that stage in your life.
Yeah.
You know, do you have to have the best medical aid plan if you are in your early 20s? You know, statistically, the chances are small that you would have major medical expenses unless there's an accident.
Mm.
Whereas older people don't have the same degree of health than younger people. Mm-hmm. And that's why typically you have to make then provision for, better medical cover in your old age. So that's the financial cycle. And to understand that the A is such a thing, and B, where am I, and do I have everything that's, you know, sort of expected of someone in my sort of where I am in the cycle?
Mm-hmm.
You know, am I covered for all those eventualities?
And it's actually also a good thing that you're highlighting there, because one of the biggest, well, I don't want to be morbid about this, you know, not to throw in a little bit of a shadow of our talk, but usually a lot of this comes up about, what do they call that? Life insurances, but specifically that is also coinciding with funeral policies and the likes.
Mm.
And many people, we all know in a life cycle, there is an end. to put it in that scenario,
yes.
This particular scenario also speaks towards what we just mentioned earlier, or had a look at the rainy days or the unforeseen circumstances or unforeseen scenarios. And obviously that speaks a lot to the financial literacy, how you need to adequately allocate resources in potential what if scenarios. Now the reason where it's a good thing that you highlighted it in the life cycle is this a specific exercise that should be practiced at the end of every month, like with budgeting, like with, you know, understanding what your specific needs are? Or is it something that you assess in some other periodic scenario? Because you would obviously look at 18 to 29 and then 30 to 39 in those 10-year gaps. How would they work? Is it specific to person, or is it a specific template that people can adopt?
No, I think, and I can only speak from personal experience, but I do it once a year.
Mm-hmm.
And typically around the period when I've been fortunate enough that I've worked for companies where, you know, you would get a salary increase typically every year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some years might be better than others.
Yeah.
But the thing is, your premiums for your life insurance or your even your short-term insurance. Mm. So the short-term insurance is insurance on your personal belongings, your car, house, etc.
Mm.
Those things increase. And medical aid, for instance.
Mm.
And often these things increase by far more than what your salary increases,
yeah.
Right? And that is inflation at play there, you know, the extent to which your purchasing power of what you earn declines. So by doing a financial review on yourself or with your financial advisor, what you're basically assessing there is to say, okay, you know, I know that things are going up by, you know, somewhere between 5% and 10% in the new year. I received a 4% salary increase, so I might have a shortfall, you know, so where can I cut? Or things like take motor vehicle insurance, for instance. The value of your car does not increase. Yeah. It is less, right? So say you buy a new car for $300,000 and you insure it for $300,000. Now, next year, that car is only worth $270,000, but it's still covered for $300,000. That's not right, because now you're paying a higher premium. Yeah. What you should do is ask your insurance broker and say, listen, what is my car worth now? And can we bring down my insurance now to, say, 270,000, not 300? And that's one way then of saving on that premium. But you also know that medical aid is going up. So your saving on your short-term insurance, you know, might now assist you to
sort of like assist in
paying for something that is going up with more than what your salary is going up. So for me, it's an annual process that I do, and for some of it I do it myself, others I do it with my financial advisor to just make sure that I'm adequately covered and remain on track when it comes to the savings side. You know, am I still? Because once you've fallen behind, it gets very hard to catch up again.
Yeah, it actually does. We'll quickly be taking a short break, Etienne. We'll be back right after this. And coming back from the short break, dear listeners, once again, just where we left off, this is the Business and Economic segment in partnership with Allan Gray Namibia. And in the studio for this evening, we've obviously had last week for two sessions the Allan Gray Orbis Foundation, Allan Gray Namibia and Orbis Foundation, specifically where we've spoken to Mr. Gavin Frey. But for tonight, we've got Mr. Etienne Leroux back in terms of just highlighting some of the key and most important scenarios specifically pertaining towards financial literacy. Etienne, if we pick up where we left off just before the break, specifically we're now looking at the notion in a Namibian context, because there would be information that people have accessible that is like standardized or just your run-of-the-mill information. But if we look at what sort of ground level, easy to access resources for seeking financial advice or information exists, what would they usually look like in a Namibian scenario? Because it would be easy for me to say, just Google it, but then not everyone understands the functions sometimes of a pure Google search sometimes, and even just to filter the proper information.
Yeah, I think even something like Allan Gray's website, we have a section on our website called Latest Insights. And if you, there are different categories there, one being retirement, other one personal investing, and there are many articles available that speak to different scenarios.
Yeah.
You know, one popular one is always, you know, what to do with if you are lucky enough to receive a bonus from your employer.
What not to do.
what not to do or what to do, right?
Yeah.
And so there are resources like that. And, you know, I'm not particularly fond of reading. I do it. It's part of my work. What I love about those articles, it gives you a time indication of how long it takes to read through that article, and you'll be surprised. Many of them, most of them, in fact, I would think, are less than 10 minutes reading. Now, if you take just 10 minutes out of your day to spend reading on, you know, financial topics or educating yourself on finances, by just taking that 10 minutes a day, you're already putting yourself probably in the top 10 or 20% of financially literate people in the world, I would think. Because a lot of people just ignore this, you know. It's human nature to kind of avoid subjects
and
topics.
Yes,
and that make you feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know, I always, whenever I want to speak to my to my mother about her finances, she always finds an excuse and say, now's not a good time. I've got to do this or I've got to do that. Or let's not spoil a nice evening. We're talking about things like this. And it's human nature to shy away from it. Then there are other websites like Investopedia. For those of you familiar with Wikipedia, there's one for investing and finances. Very good if you don't know what certain words are, the jargon, especially around, in the world of finance. Even YouTube's got wonderful videos, but again, I guess there are so many that one need to be careful which ones you listen to.
They've got to make sure that they watch the English speaking ones.
I mean, I guess that's that's.
I stumbled upon some that would have a bit of Indian in it, and then you can't understand, and you're like. Yeah. Okay, now I'm out of the subject.
Look, there are so many in it, and to look for that. And I mean, shows like this, Dwight, I think are massively important. Mm. They are, and you will be surprised. I mean, I think all the unit trust companies would publish, typically on a quarterly basis. Certainly, Alan Gray has what we call the quarterly commentary, where we have articles on various topics. And similar to ourselves, there would be other unit trust companies that would publish the same, and I think those are good starts, to read that. And I promise you need 10 minutes a day to put yourself in a better position than the next person.
Actually, the advice is 30 minutes a day to read, so people can actually split up each of the 10 minute segments and then just adequately access them. But even if we look at, this discussion of easy to access financial advice or information, how important is it that they also that they are in the information network of an average person? So you already said, just taking the 10 minutes, putting that aside, but then just knowing the reasonable amount of access points, how critical does that play in also for them just to know the foundational information on any decisions that they've got to make, whether to save or not to save? It's up to you, dear listeners. That's purely up to you. But when we look at this, the discussion of financial literacy, how does it factor in there?
I don't think one should run away from it. Mm. You're asking how important are they in the networks of the average person here in Namibia. Don't run away. I mean, you are likely to know somebody that works for a bank or investment company or...
That might be an accountant.
That might be an accountant, whatever the case might be. And ask, it doesn't hurt. I've recently asked a friend at the bank, what are your views on the interest rate prospects? Are we looking at, because I mean, at Alan Graham, we might have our own opinions, but it's also good to know what the opinions are, the views are of others.
Mm.
So I think it make it part of your network, and do the research.
Mm.
People are, it's interesting, and I might have mentioned it on one of the episodes, but people do spend a lot more time deciding what car or shoes to buy as opposed to the financial products that they invest in.
Yeah.
Why? Because it's something that you feel a lot more familiar with.
Mm.
And if you feel more familiar with something, you are less, you are more likely, to go with it, if I can put it that way. So if you've listened to some of these episodes and you appreciate the role that unit trust could play in your financial well-being, then read up on unit trusts. Mm-hmm. And the more you understand about it, the more comfortable you would be eventually, to utilize a unit trust as just by way of an example. Mm-hmm. Use unit trust. And let's be honest, we are a lot more comfortable with the things that we understand than the ones we don't.
Yep.
And if you're going to blindfold me and say, open your mouth, I'm going to put something and you taste and you tell me what it is, chances are not very good that I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
But if I have my eyes open and see I'm about to take a bite of, a Mupani worm, which I've recently attempted, it's much easier than doing it blindfolded.
And obviously, it's also the trust factor that plays a part, because ultimately, like you just highlighted, if people love spending every month on a new T-shirt, rather than, you know, a savings component, or saying, hey, listen, let me sort out the rainy days. It's obviously just in terms of the trust that they associated to it. Etienne, one of the important topics or subject matter for our discussion tonight is also looking at one core feature that plays into financial literacy, which is the budgeting. We've had the budgeting in a previous episode, but it always comes up again. You've also alluded to it at the start of tonight's session. Budgeting obviously means do this every day, do this every month. Like you also noted, you know, reviewing every year personally. I just make the numbers and assume and go with God and all that other discussions. But when you're looking at the individual in a Namibian context, how important would budgeting play in the financial literacy realm, specifically in helping them understand what financial literacy speaks to?
I think it is important. I think it is so important to budget, and it doesn't matter, how large or small your salary is. Mm. In fact, you know, it's, I think, subconsciously people who think they earn a good salary would be more inclined to give out more money. Mm. You know, and you've got to be careful. It isn't, if you are lucky enough to have a salary bump, for instance, you know, if you're just going to spend all that money on things you don't need, you're actually not in a better position. Mm. Which first bring me to, and I should have mentioned this earlier, but one of the starting points is really to distinguish between what we call the needs and the wants.
Yeah.
In one's life, the needs are the things that you require to that are required for you to survive. Think about accommodation, food, clothing. Mm. Those are the things that you need. Things that you want are completely different. If I would like a milkshake or an ice cream every day,
mm.
I don't need it. It's not necessary for my survival.
Yeah.
Right? That is something I want. Now, when it comes to budgeting, you know, again, you know, the textbook, the handbook writers out there would suggest that you spend 50% of your earnings on the things that you need: housing, transport, groceries, you know, water, electricity,
yeah,
medical payments, and then sort of your scheduled payments, your debit orders. So they suggest that half of your money goes towards the things that you need. Then 30% on the things that you want,
mm,
things like, you know, shopping, entertainment, takeaways, whatever your hobbies are, and some luxuries, and then the remaining 20% should go towards savings. You know, saving additionally.
Yeah.
You might recall I've mentioned earlier that, you know, if you do belong to a pension fund, it is still unlikely that your pension would one day allow you to continue with the lifestyle that you've had, mm, whilst you were working, right? So you have to save in addition to your pension fund. But yeah, so first of all, remind yourself, what are the things that I really need, right? And write down what they are and how much that would cost you.
There's a song that goes, "Money can't buy me love." And that's true. But then they told us all you need is love, which anybody with a mortgage will tell you most certainly is not true. Love won't pay your parking tickets or your student loan. It's also needy. It requires effort, availability, constant care. But more importantly, love requires time. And while money can't buy you love, it can certainly free up some of your time. Time to spend on the things you love with the people you love. And if you're looking, maybe even time to find the one you love. That's why, after 50 years of investing, we've learned that time is the greatest gift of all. And the good news is, if you invest early, time gives you money. And then money gives you more time to do the things you love. And don't you love that about investing? Ellen Gray, long-term investing. Ellen Gray is an authorized FSP.
What are the things that I want? And as I said, going to the movies and buying takeaways, you don't need that.
Yeah.
Right? But if you budget, it's easier to get to the point where you say, okay, I've got so much in a month. You know, just identifying what you can and cannot do.
Mm.
So, yeah, budgeting and your bigger budget, I guess you could do longer in advance, but it would also be a good idea to just do a bit of accounting at the end of the month and see, okay, you know, where did my money go? And once you understand for a few months consecutively, where's my money gone, now you can start planning more effectively and say, oh, wow, do you know, actually, that coffee shop I pass every day, that $25 I spend every day on a cup of coffee, you know, that's nearly $500 a month if you buy it every workday.
I think, Etienne, if it is even 25, because some of them might be 45.
You're right, yeah. I don't buy, I very seldom buy a cup of coffee, but... you know, you're 100% right, Dwight. There are, what, 21, 22 working days in a month, $40, as you said. That's $800 a month,
yep,
just on takeaway coffees. I know people that buy more than one a day,
And they are heavy. I mean, just even because you even alluded to, like, the inflation discussion a little bit earlier in the budgeting. I mean, just something as basic as the want of a nice cup of, cafe latte, and then you realize, oh my goodness, jumping from $30 to $40,
easy.
It's an easy jump for the business selling it, but obviously you with your want, what does it look like primarily, and how does it factor into that discussion? So yeah, the needs and wants is always a big SWOT analysis you have to run.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It is big and it's important, but it's actually quite simple. We just have to be honest with ourselves, you know, when it comes to that. But there are also many ways to reduce your expenditure. You know, once you know what your needs and wants are, the next step would for me be to identify the small debts that you might have.
Mm.
You know, if you have, for instance, a clothing account or a store account, maybe you've bought some appliances somewhere, those are the ones that are typically carry very high interest. If you can, pay off those first, you know, get rid of your debt. That is something that every financial advisor would tell you. Now, people, look, I am not blind to the fact that that we all run into difficulties from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
And it might be that you have to go to the bank or to the cash loans and say, I need an amount of money to make ends meet.
Mm-hmm.
But I cannot help to wonder how many people will take out loans to buy the wants in life.
Yeah.
The things that they want and not the things that they need. So, you know, by focusing on what your smaller debts are, paying them off first, you might actually free up quite a bit of cash flow a month that you could use to, you know, towards something else.
Mm.
One of my former colleagues always said, learn how to do certain things yourself. You know, if you have to paint out a room, I mean, it's really not that difficult. Watch a YouTube video or two on how to paint effectively, as opposed to getting someone in to paint.
Yeah.
I'm not suggesting servicing your car. You know, that's
also be something that, you know, it's also a completely different realm. Yeah. Dear listeners, please do remember that. But that's actually a good thing that you're highlighting now, Etienne, in terms of financial literacy, they speak of the conscious shopper.
Mm.
I have to share a little bit of that as well, because I personally do this every time when I have to, when it's a big purchase, for example. You know, let's, for example, say it's a rainy day, in the context that, let's say, your geyser gave in, because I hear from plumbers and technicians that there's a lot of geysers that give in the Namibian winter, and it's a continuous exercise. Now, it looks good for them.
Mm.
It obviously doesn't look good to you, the homeowner or the person living there. But when we look at being a conscious shopper, just in that nutshell, this ultimately means you should be able to shop around a bit, go and compare prices for a want or a need. Can we say you can apply to a need as well, if there are alternatives or options available to the individual?
Absolutely. You know, Dwight, I guess every parent with babies in the house would be watching the price of nappies out there.
It's actually nappies and the Ackermans accounts that they'll be watching, because they speak about lay-buying a lot. Yeah,
you know, and if you just walk around, I was in one of the largest shopping centers here in Windhoek the other day, and the same pack of nappies, there was a $60 price difference from the one store to the other. Now, you know, our little one goes through about 2 packs a month. Mm. That's a saving of 120 right there. Mm. So definitely, I mean, I'm a conscious shopper. I will definitely buy certain items in bulk, you know, especially, you know, washing powder, milk, that kind of thing, the long life milk.
Yeah.
I would buy in bulk, and you do save that way. And that's why I say, but this is part of budgeting, right? Is if you know how much you are spending in a month, then it can also develop certain healthy habits. Think about it as well. You know, if carpooling, for instance, it is huge in the rest of the world.
That's actually a good idea.
And you know, it might just be that somebody working in the building next to you is driving to work as well every day, you know, from not too far, you know, and you might live quite close. Get to an agreement. Imagine you could save half the fuel costs in a month. Things like electricity costs. You get these geyser blankets. You mentioned the geyser in the winter. You can buy these geyser blankets, wrap it around your geyser. It stays longer, warmer for longer. And it reduces your electricity consumption. There are ways. If you challenge yourself, you would find ways to how you could save money. You know, and the more you save on the one side, the more you have for the things that you might want and save. Also, I always love this saying, and I think it's by Warren Buffett, if I'm not mistaken, where he said, "Save first and then spend."
Yeah.
But what do we typically do as human beings?
We flip it around. Yeah.
We spend, and then we say to ourselves, if there's something left at the end of the month, I'll put that away.
Or I might consider.
You know.
Yeah.
So, and I think if you go with that mindset, you might actually find you never have anything left at the end of the month to say. So let those debit orders go off, especially with the unit trust, for those of you who have it. Let it go off, your insurance, everything else, and then you know, okay, there's this much left that I can spend on other things.
One of the other particularly good aspects also about the conscious shopping is how the rise in like cycling, walking, you mentioned the carpooling also comes through. Obviously, it speaks to healthy habits as well. If it's just a last touch from you, Etienne, on that scenario, because it obviously speaks to that there are many things that the person can look at in a 360 degree view of what they interact with or what they rely on, which ultimately is a good thing to have at the back of their mind. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think it's adopting habits, right? Things are not going to change by itself. Intervention is required. This must be the individual telling, you know, him or herself that I need to improve my financial discipline.
Yeah.
Part of it, and I think that, you know, that's what we're talking about tonight, is financial literacy. So, you know, equip yourself with that information. Actually, you know, on the budgeting, I come to think of it, Dwight, there are actually free budgeting templates on Excel that you could download, where you can just where it will do some calculations for you.
Yeah.
So type in, this is how much I spend on electricity and water and transport, you know, whether it's taxi or petrol for your own vehicle. Those things are there.
Mm.
Now you know this. Now you don't have any excuse anymore.
Not
to budget.
Yeah.
It's hugely important.
If we also primarily we've got like a last 9-ish minutes still on this evening's discussion, Etienne, if we look at the one of the last particular aspects, which is obviously we've spoken about the planning for the unknown, which is one of the singularly most important things, but there's a whole lot of curveballs that get thrown at people. And obviously, in this discussion of financial literacy, the question of resilience is cannot be overemphasized beyond. I don't think we can overemphasize it past Swakopmund or even Chobabis, because it speaks of that. That's how big it has to be. But when we look at them, there are obviously the off chances that the rainy day will come about. And in Namibia, this takes various formats. But if we look at them, there's a nice little survey, specifically if we speak about it, how this can negatively impact income. What can we actually extrapolate from this, just in this last 9-minute discussion that we've got?
Yeah.
What does it look like for someone to consider in the rainy day discussions?
Yeah. Now, Dwight, I think it was the Namibia Statistics Agency that they did... they did a survey, beg your pardon, in 2017.
Mm.
And they looked at, you know, these events that affected people's income. Now, you know, at the top of the list was illnesses of, you know, within your own household or a family that required medical expenses over and above, you know, your medical aid, or if you had no medical aid, you know, whatever the government medical would have provided you with.
Yeah.
And roughly 1 out of 5 people had that as the number one unforeseen event affecting their income.
Yeah.
And with the rising cost of medical procedures, yeah, and medicine, treatment, yeah, and treatment, yeah, you know, I think that is something that might increase. Now, I've mentioned COVID before, and, you know, what we've realized there is that we do have to put that money away, that emergency fund.
Mm.
And, you know, these planning for the unknown is what that emergency fund is for.
Mm.
You know, there's the second thing is the increase in the household size. You, yep, know, it might either be that you have another child, or that you know unexpectedly have to take care of a relative that is now, I don't want to call it a burden, but that has an impact on your income. Mm. You know, if there's another mouth to feed, this is going to cost you. So nearly 15% of Namibians were affected by that, and more or less the same percentage of income earners were affected by the rise in living costs.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned earlier that, you know, your salary does not always increase, you know, to the same extent that living expenses increase.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely, if you look at food and fuel and everything else, it seems to be a lot higher than what your salary would have increased.
Yeah.
And then there's a whole range of other sort of events that impacted incomes in Namibia, you know, education expenses, death within the family, loss of income, that kind of thing. So, you know, damages, whether it's loss of livestock, damage to the house,
yep,
you know, things like that. So planning for the unknown, again, that can be you know, sort of mitigate it, or you can absorb the impact of these unforeseen things by having that emergency fund in place. But it also, Dwight, makes me think about, you know, something else. Because somebody said, yeah, what if I do, or somebody once asked me, what now I have, you know, 3 or 6 months salary put aside, and then there's never an emergency in my whole life, and I've now put this money aside and I could have enjoyed it. Well, the good thing is you can enjoy it when you retire, right? Mm. Then this could actually augment. This could actually be an addition to your retirement savings.
Mm.
And, you know, on the topic, because this is the whole sort of, I think that's the ultimate goal from a financial planning perspective. And, you know, also, we forming part of this discussion on financial literacy is you want to equip yourself to save enough to retire comfortably one day. Sure, you want to live in between, but it's I think the ultimate goal for the majority of us is to retire with dignity. And that means having sufficient funds to look after yourself, because it's very dangerous to rely on someone else. to look after you when you are retired. But you want to know some shocking statistics when it comes to retirement, is that only 6% of people in Namibia can afford to retire comfortably. And what that means is that you can continue with the lifestyle that you've had whilst you were working.
Yep.
That is 6 out of 100 people, right? Think about that. A school hall might fit 500 people. That means out of the 500 people in the school hall, only 30 people, only one row of people, would be lucky enough to retire comfortably. Another 16% of people in Namibia that are retired once they reach retirement age will be fully dependent on state pensions. I cannot recall. Is it 1,400 or 1,600
It's one of the two totals. Yeah,
that one becomes from government when you reach the age of 60.
Mm.
Now, 16% of people will rely solely on that money from the government. Now, you know how, I mean, things are expensive. It is. Whether it's food, whether it's electricity, that 1,400 or 600 would only take you that far.
Yep.
And another shocking number is that 31% of people who reach retirement age needs to continue working to earn a living.
Yep.
Now, look, I've said it before. I don't think people are considered old anymore.
Or sort of like not being able to work yet.
Able to work. Imagine you could work for another 5 years and you don't have to touch your retirement savings.
Mm.
And you give everything that you've saved up in your life another 5 years to grow. It can have an enormous impact on the money that you have available when you do eventually retire then. And then 47%, that's nearly half of us, when we reach retirement age, we would in one way or another depend on family members to support us financially.
Yep.
That's nearly half of people. So look, it's a very grim picture that I'm painting here towards the end.
Yep.
But now that you know this, you can and by applying things as simple as budgeting. And remember what I've said earlier, budgeting can be as simple as taking a piece of paper and writing down, what do I have? What do I earn? What are my expenses? And what do I have left to save?
Mm.
Now that you know this, and if you save, then you can actually, prevent yourself from falling into or becoming part of that terrible statistics of being financially destitute. So, and that is what financial literacy is all about, is knowing these things, equipping yourself with the knowledge to not become part of the statistics.
And on that note, Etienne, actually, this was this evening's discussion here on the Business and Economic segment. If you still have any lasting, anything that you still wanted to add before we sign out on tonight's discussion, you can still add it on.
Yeah, look, I would just encourage everyone. As I said, I'm not a big reader. Start with 5 minutes a day.
Mm.
Promise yourself when it's that cup of tea or coffee in the morning or that tea just before you go to bed, just read 5 minutes. 5 minutes goes by so quickly. Just read 5 minutes. Just Google something you might have seen in the newspaper, something you might have heard on radio, a word that you have not, don't know what the meaning is. Google it. Just equip yourself that way. I promise you, you are really doing yourself a massive favor. And share it with your family. Don't shy away. I don't know why there's this thing in the world where people are too shy to talk about money. We should be talking to our children about money. We should be sharing the knowledge that we have. We should be sharing it with others, to have an even bigger effect.
And an impact.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And on that note, dear listeners, we thank you once again. And this has been the Business and Economic segment here on your number one talk radio station of Eagle FM in partnership with Alan Gray Namibia.
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low because I donated blood.
Call NHP on 061 285 5400. We're about you.